Welcome to the Nittany Blues Podcast. By Penn State fans, for Penn State fans. Here are your hosts, Andrew and Vince.
What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Nittany Blues Podcast, where we talk about Penn State football, basketball, and all things Nittany Lions. Thanks so much for joining us. Vince, hope you're doing well. Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you, man. You know, lots of stuff going on, lots of things to talk about. But first, what are your thoughts on Clemson and Florida State being added to the Big Ten?
Well, I certainly think that the April Fool's joke of it was convincing enough to convince plenty of people on Facebook who were both flabbergasted, shocked, and unhappy, both at the news, the fake news, and also about the fact that they got duped by Onward State. It was so funny because in those groups, like all day long, people were sharing those stories. Like for some reason, they just didn't catch on that all these things were fake. So they kept like sharing these things as if it was groundbreaking news. And each time somebody had to be like, you know, this is fake, right? Like it's April Fool's and all that stuff. And then it devolved to the point where later in the day, somebody had to then post, I'm getting really tired of all these April Fool's posts and stuff like that. It's just like, then don't take them seriously. Like, recognize the day. So, yeah, thought that was pretty funny. Perfect time to drop that kind of stuff, though, because, yeah, they got people hook, line, and sinker.
Oh, yeah, that was definitely one that was believable. I believed it for a minute, and then I was going to text our group, and then I was like, you know what? I'm going to check a secondary source. I feel like I'm being played here. And I was right. But for a minute, I had to believe it. So that was probably the best one. There are some other good ones out there, like Leo Boyle being granted another year of eligibility. Coach Franklin saying that he was going to resign as head coach if he did not make the college football playoff, which I knew that one was fake immediately. Ronnie James transferring to Penn State. They recycled that one from last year. So a lot of good April Fool's jokes. Something that is not an April Fool's joke, though, is next week we will have a very exciting announcement for the pod. So if you are a listener, make sure you do not miss our really important announcement for next week. We also have some basketball action to talk about, some transfer portal stuff. Women's basketball team, they had a really great game at home on Thursday. They advanced to the Final Four of the WBIT tournament. Unfortunately, they did lose a close game yesterday. They lost 58-53 in a defensive battle. They were tied around halftime, really close game. And then Villanova kind of pulled away to about a 10-point lead. And the Lady Lions just were unable to close that gap. And unfortunately, they will not be playing for the championship on Wednesday, as we all had hoped. But still, overall, really good season, 22 wins, 8-win improvement from last year. So program is definitely heading in the right direction. So good news in that. Also, men's basketball, there's been some action there, some transfer portal action. Demetrius Lilly has found a new home in the portal. He was a backup center, got some rotational minutes. He did miss a lot of games with some lower back issues, but he's going to be continuing his basketball career down in LaSalle. He's a Philly guy, so Lower Marion, so he's going to be heading back closer to home, so we wish him the best. Kanye Clary also found a new home down in Mississippi State, so he is going to be playing in the SEC. And Penn State also picked up their first center in the portal in Xavier Center.
Kachi Enza.
So he was a freshman last year, 6'8", 230 pounds. A little undersized for a center, but plays physical. And this is a very high position of need for the Nittany Lions. And this is an area where I'm expecting them to, double or triple dip here in the transfer portal. They desperately need bigs. And a guy who's out there now and is available is Kerry Booth. And why Kerry Booth is interesting is he is the son of Calvin Booth, who is the Denver Nuggets GM and also Penn State alumni. And Kerry, his son, previously committed to Penn State when Micah Shrewsbury was the head coach. So he played 1 year with him at Notre Dame. So he has entered the portal to explain options. And if I'm Penn State, I'm throwing everything NIL. I count this guy. He had a nice season last year. I think he has a lot of potential. So I think that would be a really big ad for the Penn State program, and also just a really fun guy to cheer for having Penn State roots.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, when I saw this, I immediately texted you and Charlie because of the potential implications of this news. I mean, not only does it fill an area of need, this is also kind of fitting into the trend of recent former Penn State recruits, targets, or even commits in certain cases to, you know, have a second chance to bring them back into the fold, bring them to Happy Valley. So I think for multiple reasons, this is something that fans should keep their eye on. I checked a number of sources, and right now there's no transfer portal predictions out there yet for Booth, but I have seen that he's gotten a good deal of attention already from programs like Michigan. So Penn State should definitely be doing their due diligence to get on the horn with him and see if we can't make this happen.
Yeah, he is a guy I would definitely love to really see in the blue and white. And speaking of blue and white, we have Blue White Weekend coming up in a few weeks. Andrew, what are some things you're looking forward to with Blue White coming right around the corner?
Yeah, so, I mean, gosh, where do we even start here? You know, I just am really excited to see what the potential new look offense looks like with Kotelniki. A lot of the feedback and reactions coming out of spring ball is very positive. A lot of the offensive guys have rave things to say about his system and how they're running practice and, you know, just his approach to being the offensive coordinator. So I'm excited to see that. Obviously excited to see, you know, more of Drew and Bo. You know, I want to see how they're continuing to progress going into their second year of action here as the, you know, expected starter and backup at quarterback. Also really excited to see the receivers, you know, especially with Julian Fleming, see like what that group now looks like with a bit of experience and a little cachet infused into that room after a lackluster year last year. And on the defensive side, I think that, you know, all fans should be excited about what Penn State got in the transfer portal at cornerback with our two transfer portal additions. But, you know, I think there's still a lot of guys in that room who came up through Penn State's program who are going to be very hungry for playing time, including Cam Miller and Zion Tracy and others. So very excited to see how that plays itself out, you know, using the blue and white game as a little bit of a launch pad for that going into, you know, summer and then into fall camp and stuff like that. So I think there's lots of reasons to be excited. I mean, it's free Penn State football, so nobody's going to complain about that, I'm sure. But yeah, lots to look forward to.
Yeah, no complaint for me. I do hope the weather starts turning more to that spring weather. We've definitely had a few rainy days up here in the valley. And actually, the sinkhole we had last year, it like reformed today. I almost fell before we were doing this podcast. I was running on the bike path I normally go on, and I was like, oh wait, that wasn't there yesterday. And like, there was the sinkhole starting to form, and I was like, oh yeah. If I was riding my bike, I might have not noticed that just because of like the speed I would have been going on the path. So, and then when I came back, like maybe 45 minutes later on my run, I look across the street and I was like, it got bigger. Like the hole like significantly got bigger from 45 minutes ago. So I actually crossed over the street and moved some cones, cause I'm like, oh, someone's going to like bike into this. And like, they had some cones on like the sides cause they were doing some sort of construction work. But I was like, I should move these so like no like biker or something like goes into this hole. Cause if they're going pretty fast, they might not see it, especially if it's like dark. So did my good Samaritan like kind of thing of the day. But yeah, hoping that weather turns around. We did have some baseball and softball games get rained out, so they'll be making those up later. But we did have better weather over the weekend during my birthday. 31 now, so
yeah,
I'm with you in that event. At that 31 club. So I did some fun things with, you know, friends and whatnot. Got about 10 hours on the bike this weekend. 3-day weekend, so definitely took advantage. But another squad who took advantage was the men's volleyball team. They had 2 wins over Harvard in volleyball. Women, they won 2 out of 3 matches, or sorry, games in softball. So they did a nice job against Maryland. Penn State baseball was on the road. Unfortunately, they were swept by Illinois. Penn State women's lacrosse, they lost in a heartbreaker at Ohio State. They had a big lead and then ended up losing 9-8. And unfortunately, the men's lacrosse team followed in their footsteps on Easter Sunday night. Real heartbreaker. They got off to a hot start. They were up 6-2 at the end of the first period, 8-4 at halftime, even 10-7 at the end of the third period. And then the fourth period, nothing. Fourth quarter, nothing. Nothing was working. They were just being outwilled on all of the faceoffs. Maryland won every faceoff. They were surgical, just getting those shots off. Penn State had some errors, and ultimately went to the Terrapins' way. They're number 12 team in the country, and fortunately, Penn State is down from 4 to number 8 in the polls, and Maryland is up to 6. This is going to be a really big week for Penn State lacrosse because they're going to be playing number 7 cross powerhouse John Hopkins, who is now in the Big Ten. So they're a part of that Big Ten schedule. So hoping they can bounce back. A change they made later in the fourth quarter was they switched from a man defense to a zone. This is something you saw the Nittany Lions do in their run to the Final Four last year. And, you know, a bad officiating a call from potentially being in a national championship. So I think they should have made that transition to the zone sooner when they are starting to be fatigued. So maybe that's something you'll see as they take on John Hopkins this weekend. They play on Saturday, April 6th. They'll be playing at 2 p.m. down in Baltimore. The women's team, there's a lot of blue-white events going on this weekend. 1 o'clock, the women's lacrosse team is, this is the week before. So disregard that. April 6th, we got women's lacrosse facing Michigan. Softball is going to be at a series this weekend at Nebraska. Baseball is going to be hosting Northwestern this weekend. Men's volleyball is going to be heading to Charleston. So they have a couple matches down there. And men's track and field, they will be down in Florida. Another nice Florida trip down at Coral Gables for the Hurricane Alumni Invitational. So lots of fun things going on this weekend. And if you are in the Valley and you don't mind sitting in the rain, tomorrow women's lacrosse is going to be playing at home versus Vanderbilt at 1 p.m. So you want to check that out. And Thursday, if you happen to be in Michigan, women's gymnastics will be competing at the NCAA regional tournament.
Sweet. Love all the updates. It's always exciting.
Yeah, good stuff. So what else is happening in the world of Penn State athletics? I know there's a certain guy who won a certain award.
Yeah. There's just a couple of other notes on my list here. I want to swing back to a couple things on football, but to your note, we should definitely spend a few minutes celebrating one Aaron Brooks of Penn State Wrestling, who has officially now won the Dan Hodge Award for NCAA Wrestling, which, if you're not familiar with the Hodge Award, it is essentially the Heisman Trophy of college wrestling. So it is basically considered to be the highest award that you can receive as an individual college wrestler. Incredible, you know, achievement, award, you know, now that he's one of a few Nittany Lions who have won this award in the past decade. A couple of crazy stats I'm going to share with you here. But yeah, so Aaron Brooks secured a pretty vast majority of the first place votes, or just the votes in general, for the Hodge Award, beating out Parker Keckeisen of Northern Iowa, also, you know, extremely successful wrestler this past year, undefeated, won the title at 184. But Brooks, you know, being as dominant as he was, didn't give up a takedown, had the highest percentage of bonus point wins this entire season. You know, it could have gone to either guy, but I mean, I think Brooks, kind of just with how dominant he was down the stretch, just making all of his opponents just look like, you know, they were playing a different sport, incredibly deserving to win this award. So he caps off an undefeated season, a fourth national title, another team national title, his third in a row, and now his lone Dan Hodge Award, to kind of put the perfect exclamation point on what was damn near the perfect season for Penn State wrestling.
Yeah, and what a season it was. Things did not go according to plan. You guys like Alex Facundo, who were preparing for the Olympics this year, Shane Van Ness goes down with an injury. You have Carter Starachi is wrestling on one leg and somehow wins a national title. Like, man, this was a special year for Penn State wrestling, and it was just really fun to follow and cover as media. So that for me, that was, you know, really enjoyable and special. And I got to meet some of the guys in person, and like, they're all super nice and well spoken, and I just had a great time with them. They're very like down to earth. So, you know, since I, you know, got to meet some of them, that's something cool to, you know, for me to see them do well and, you know, capitalize on the special season, 11 titles in 13 years. And yeah, I'm really looking forward to the next one. But something else I'm looking forward to is Olympic trials. So in about 3 weeks, a little less than 3 weeks, we are going to be hosting the Olympic trials in the Bryce Jordan Center. Why? Because, you know, Penn State is wrestling capital of the United States. One could argue the world. I don't think you could pick a better location. So, Andrew, I know last week we talked about that 74 kilogram weight class with Starachi and Messenbrink, the plethora of other Penn State guys and Jordan Burroughs, and how it's so loaded. Who do you think is going to come on top of that weight class? And what are some maybe other weight classes that you're looking forward to watching with Penn State alumni?
Oh man, that is a loaded question. Yeah, I would say my favorite to come out of that particular weight class is probably going to be Kyle Dake, just because he's, you know, kind of the younger guy. He kind of broke through the, you know, that barrier, if you will. He finally beat Jordan Burroughs in the last couple of years after Burroughs was the leader, de facto leader in that particular weight class. I think, you know, Messenbrink and Starachi are definitely going to give it their all. I just think there's too much experience, too much skill, you know, behind those particular guys, especially considering that Starachi will still be wrestling on a hobbled leg. I mean, it, you know, not to like discredit the other NCAA wrestlers in his weight class, but this is, I mean, there's a reason why it's like, you know, you go from the college ranks to the international ranks, and like this is a different kind of game. So I'm expecting Dake to probably come out on top of that. I would say, honestly, for me, the thing that I'm most excited about is the prospect of seeing David Taylor versus Aaron Brooks at their respective weight class. Just because, like, you want to talk about just two ultimate wrestlers for Penn State. You run out of superlatives to use for these kinds of guys because of how accomplished they were at Penn State, how good they are, like, when you just watch them on the mat. Like, David is just, you know, he's very similar to Mitchell. I've said this a couple of times now, where he just is always looking to attack. He's always looking to score. He never stops moving. And Aaron is more like the, you know, he's just going to like watch you, wait for his opportunity. Like, he's going to be like this, like, just fortress where it's just like, you're not going to score on him. And the moment that you slip up, he's going to make you pay, and he's going to score some points on you. So I think it's, you know, two different styles, two guys who are extremely skilled, very experienced now at this point. I mean, Aaron has wrestled in the international ranks a couple of times himself outside of his work with the Nittany Lions. So it's not like this is going to be, you know, like master versus apprentice or something like that. Aaron is extremely experienced internationally in his own right. So I'm very excited to see that. And then I believe down at it's 65 kilograms, if I'm not mistaken. Zane Rutherford is the current world champion at that weight class, a two-time Hodge winner from Penn State. You know, so he's a guy who, you know, similar to David Taylor in certain ways, maybe doesn't get the same like notoriety as he does, but I mean, when you look at his accomplishments, they speak for himself. So I'm very excited to see what he does at these trials. It would be honestly incredible if we could have multiple Nittany Lions represent in the national team at the Olympics. That would be just like, that would be insane. Like, you know, you want to talk about like just how strong of a culture and place and just program that the Nittany Lion Wrestling Club and Penn State Wrestling is. I mean, that would be the ultimate endorsement. So I'm excited to see what comes out of it. It's going to be, I mean, it's just like, you want to talk about a place being wrestling central for a couple of days. It doesn't get much more on the nose than in the Bryce Jordan Center with the best wrestlers in the world. Many of them are going to wake up in their own beds and drive down the street to the Bryce Jordan Center. Like, it's time to rumble.
Yeah. And as an athlete, that's such a big advantage, especially at an event like as big as this. Like, I know for myself doing the Half Ironman in Happy Valley last year, just the ability to sleep in my own bed and just being so familiar with all the roads and everything I was doing and the facilities and eating the same food, like it just gets you in your routine. That's what you want as an athlete. You love being in that routine, and that just almost like boosts your confidence. It's not like you're in an unfamiliar environment. And, you know, studies show even if like you sleep in a different bed, you don't sleep as well. So I think that's a big advantage that our guys have. And I'm really looking forward to potentially watching. Maybe I'll get some tickets for the, you know, the semifinals and finals on Saturday. That'll be to be determined in a few weeks, but I think that would be something that would be awesome to watch. So that was a really good news there. Question for you. I know there was some debate on Mount Rushmore spots. So if David Taylor takes down Aaron Brooks and he beats him head to head, is that enough for him to earn a spot on the Mount Rushmore over Aaron Brooks if he wins the head to head?
No. And the reason I say that is because, you know, my selection criteria was strictly what they accomplished at Penn State. I said this during our last episode that, you know, if you tacked on international achievements into the mix, David Taylor like immediately knocks Bo Nickel off of my Mount Rushmore. In fact, I mean, David Taylor has a head-to-head win over Bo Nickel to win a spot to be on the national team, I believe, for one of the world championships. So, you know, he already kind of has like that type of accomplishment under his belt, beating a guy who has more national titles than he did at Penn State and stuff like that. But yeah, so I'm going to stick true to the four names that I selected. But yeah, like when you want to talk though about like, you know, what they accomplished at Penn State as well as beyond, I mean, David Taylor takes the cake by far.
That's great stuff. So other examples of greatness that we have in Penn State, Tessa Janecki from the women's ice hockey team just made the world championship squad for the United States. So that is some big news there. You also had Chikna Traore. He broke the Penn State record in the 200 meter dash, 20.23 seconds. So he's about 1 second off of Usain Bolt's time in the 200, which is just insane. So he's getting very close to creeping down into the 19s. That would be awesome to see him hit that sub 20 second barrier. Haley Kitchen, you know, our Australian, she's crazy fast. 201 in the 800. So school record there, really amazing performance. So she's also almost a sub 2 mark. So you see great performances by Penn State athletes all over, everywhere, on the track, on the ice, on the football field, on the wrestling mat. Man, we're just so lucky we get to cover this every week.
Amen to that. And yeah, one last point on wrestling too. So on the Hodge Trophy topic, the trophy was started back in 1995. There have been 32 Hodge Award winners in the entire history of the award being given. There were two times where there were co-winners of the award. So there's 32 in total. So out of the 32 that have ever won the award, 10 of those were won by the guy who's coaching Penn State or by Penn State wrestlers themselves. So we're talking, you know, contained within the program, nearly a third of, you know, like all the wrestling Heismans ever given out. Like, so how crazy is that? Because you've got Kale Sanderson, who is the only 3-time winner. So he definitely tips the scales Penn State's favor. But even when you take out his three, like the cards are still stacked in Penn State's favor. Because then you have Kerry McCoy, who won it in 97, I believe. He was a 285 wrestler, won the national championship. So he did his work before Kale Sanderson actually got to Iowa State and, you know, accomplished everything he did. And you had David Taylor, who won it twice. You had Zane Rutherford, who has won it twice. Bo Nickel, who won it once, and now Aaron Brooks. So that makes 10 in total for coach and team alike. So yeah, I mean, you want to talk about like running out of like superlative, crazy accomplishments and achievements and stuff like that. Like, so just, that's just another, you know, feather in the cap, if you will.
Yeah. That is so impressive. A third of all the like, can you imagine it? Like Penn State has one Heisman winner out of, I don't know how many Heisman winners there are, but we have one. The fact that we have a third of all the wrestling ones is it's just insane. And man, is that exciting? It just, man, I'm so like, after all of the heartbreak we've like suffered from like Penn State football and like basketball, hockey, all these other sports, falling at a certain level, the fact that we always have Penn State wrestling that will always win the Natty every single year, like probably till we die, like it's just an awesome thing to have there in our back pocket.
Yeah, for real. And you can't see me right now, but I'm knocking on wood. I feel good about our chances, next year and beyond, but I'm superstitious like that. But yeah, no, the future is like incredibly bright. I mean, we have so much young talent coming in, and we've also got solid recruits like PJ Duke, Mason Gibson coming in. I mean, there's like the deck is going to be loaded again. Let's just say that. But that's all I got for wrestling. On football, there are two things that I wanted to just quickly cover, get your thoughts on. Go ahead.
One fun thing. So my friend who's neighbors with Kale Sanderson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I do have to tell this story, though, of how they met. So they're moving in or whatever, and the car has a Penn State wrestling sticker on it. And like, I think my friend just like talking with his wife or something, and he goes, "Oh, Penn State wrestling. So do you guys like wrestling?" And they're like, "Oh yeah, yeah, yeah." And like, "Oh, my husband's like the coach." And they're like, "Oh, cool. Is he like an assistant coach or something?" And God. Like, no, he's like the head coach.
He's like the coach. Yeah. He's, the most successful coach that has ever coached at Penn State.
Yeah, yeah.
Insane.
So that was a little sidebar from my story since you brought it up. So
yeah,
that was pretty funny. And he said he's like the best neighbor like ever that he could wish for. So that's pretty cool. And yeah, his kids give him a hard time. I guess for the BJC duel, they're wrestling on like a Monday night or something. So my buddy had to like send his kid to bed early, and he didn't get to stay up for all the matches. And like his, kid was like trash talking Kale, like when he was outside, like, I don't know, doing some yard work or something, and or shoveling snow, because I think they had like a snow day. We had a snow day. And he's like, "What are you guys doing wrestling on a Monday night?" And Kale's like, "I don't want to be wrestling then. I don't get to pick the time. I just got to go win."
That's great. That's good stuff.
So yeah, awesome guy in the community. Yeah, so got to bike by his house. I don't know which one it was. I didn't ask or want to be creepy or anything, but
so you couldn't like tell which one it was by like the sheer glow from all the hardware and trophies and stuff that was contained inside. I'd imagine it like has like an aura, like a suitcase that like contains uranium or something. Like, yeah. You'd be able to tell.
I'm just like peeping through the windows looking for like wrestling trophies.
Yeah. Whenever you have to like put on sunglasses to look in like the, the main like foyer or living room or something, that's probably the one.
Yeah. So, that's a little funny little tidbit. So since my family celebrated Easter, I was biking with my buddy, on Easter before his dinner. So yeah. So that was a fun little sidebar, how I spent my Easter bike by Kale's place. I would have wished him I was hoping to like run into him and wish him a happy Easter. That would have been a fun thing for the pod, but fortunately didn't happen. So maybe next time.
Next time. Yeah, for sure. Cool. So yeah, got some football stuff here. This is kind of a not so fun update. Got an update that Jackson Smolik, third string quarterback on the team, suffered an injury in spring ball that is supposedly going to cause him to miss a good amount of time. We're not sure the severity or the nature of the injury, which is pretty common with Penn State football, mm-hmm. but we got confirmation that he did suffer that injury. So we're obviously wishing him the best. Really sucks for a kid that was getting a ton of rave reviews pretty much as soon as he got onto campus. Franklin and crew were really talking nothing but positive things about his ability to pick things up quickly and his development and all that stuff. So really hope that he can get back onto the field in quick fashion. One thing that's kind of interesting about this is that now true freshman Ethan Grunkemeyer is essentially put into the driver's seat for that third string quarterback spot. He's another guy who's been getting a lot of rave reviews lately. they're always going to say positive things about their incoming freshmen and stuff like that. But yeah, you never hate to see good things, you know, about your young quarterback coming in, especially when he's you know, the kind of caliber of guy who's like an Elite 11 finalist, highly recruited, four-star guy. Like that's the kind of feedback you want to be seeing. So at least, you know, barring Smolik's return from injury before the 2024 season starts, it looks like the depth chart might be Drew, Bowe, and then Ethan.
Yeah. So thoughts. I think it'll be, this Blue White weekend is going to be really interesting. I'm looking forward to seeing, you know, more Ethan Grunkemeyer. I think it'll be really exciting to see him for the first time because, you know, barring disaster, we're probably not going to be seeing him much in the, you know, the fall this year. If you're Coach Franklin and you have depth at that position, you're probably trying to not play him more than those three or four games they get before they have to burn that red shirt. So you want to keep that red shirt as long as you can, especially with Drew having one more year, and then maybe Bo's going to be behind him. So I think, we'll see. You know, Ethan might jump over Bo. We don't know. He could be, you know, the next Trace. Well, that's probably a bad analogy because Bo's playing style is more similar to Trace. So
and he also has his number.
Yeah, maybe he's the next Todd Blackledge. So we'll say that. So we don't know that, but you know, unless he's spectacular, you're expecting Franklin to use the red shirt with most of his freshmen. But the fact that he is getting that positive praise is a really good sign, because with freshmen, you can kind of be honest with the fans. Like you can say, like he said, I think it was Messiah Mickens, the running back, or it was one of the young running backs. He was like, I think it was Quentin Martin. He said, he was a little raw. We were expecting him to be more raw coming in, but he's actually ahead of schedule of where we thought he'd be. So that, you know, that was a comment that he said. So you can say things like, You know, he's got a ways to go, but we're liking, you know, the attitude and the hard work he comes with every day. You can say whatever you want, or, you know, we're still developing him and we expect him to be a really good player. The fact that they're saying things that, oh, he's doing really good now, I think is a really positive sign.
Agreed. Yeah. So we'll see if he, you know, how much playing time he gets in the blue and white game. So touted as like a gunslinger, guy with a talented arm, similar to, you know, what we heard about Drew and some others coming in. I mean, Drew obviously has like the kind of pro ready body archetype, if you will, big dude, Josh Allen type body. So, I mean, we'll see. It'll be interesting, but I mean, like you said, I think in the grand scheme of things, this doesn't impact Penn State too heavily, just because you wouldn't expect or want Grunkemeyer to be seeing the field too much, or Smolik for that matter, in this upcoming season. So we'll see how that all plays out. So the last thing that I have for you here, so I have a story that I wanted to share with you about football. So, you know, it's kind of fitting that you shared your Kale Sanderson story, because it's story time now.
Yeah, I have this like thing of like, or I'm like, okay, I need to meet the coach on every single athletic team. Like that's my goal, because like I've checked off Coach Rhodes, at Coach Keeger at Wingfest. Yeah, so
working down the list
to Coach Gondak on track. I know him, so I'm working down my list to try to meet all these coaches.
Good stuff. So, yeah, my story here revolves around an older gentleman that I played pickleball with recently. So one thing that's kind of neat about the game is that you know meet people from all over the place of different ages and stuff like that. And so we got done with an open play session, and I put on a Penn State quarter zip that I just use as like, you know, just a jacket to like come in and like leave with and stuff like that, since it's still, you know, like the wintry spring like transition period and stuff like that. He's like, oh, did you go to Penn State? And I said, yeah. And he said, when'd you graduate? And I said, back in 15. He's like, wow, that's cool. I graduated back in 83. And I was like, oh, that's really neat. Like, did you see Todd Blackledge and like Kurt Warner walking around camp? He's like, yeah. Yeah, Kurt Warner definitely stood out. You know, he's just like a big dude, and he was saying, he kind of just started going down memory road a little bit, and there was another guy in our group who actually also went to PSU. He graduated in, I believe it was 09. So we had like a trio of us, and he was saying about how the best game that he ever saw or experienced was in 82, and they were welcoming Nebraska into town. And he said one thing that you got to remember or know is that back in that time, Beaver Stadium didn't have lights. So every game that was scheduled, it was scheduled for, you know, like a noon start, or at the probably like a 3 o'clock start, because they didn't have lights, so they couldn't play in the dark. And so Nebraska is coming. It's billed as like this marquee game, and they schedule it for 5 o'clock. And so he and the rest of the students were like, well, what are they going to do? Like, they're going to be playing in the dark. They can't, like, how are they going to make this happen? And so on the day of the game, they rolled in cranes that had lights on them to illuminate the field so that they could play at night. And it's like, I believe it was October or November at this time. So it's like starting to get dark, you know, quickly mm-hmm. and stuff. And so they brought in these cranes to like have these makeshift light fixtures so that they could play the game. And he said that, you know, so that was awesome. The students loved it. They were partying all day because, you know, it's like a day long, you know, situation like we do, like, you know, for like mm-hmm. nighttime whiteout, like that's what it was. And he said then, you know, in the game itself, Nebraska scored with very little time remaining. It was like something like less than 90 seconds, or I'd have to go back because this is actually like a famous progression where like Penn State got a favorable call, which we can go down that rabbit hole a different time.
But that never happens.
Yeah. I mean, like in this case, it definitely did. If you watch the video, it's pretty bleak. But so he said, you know, they had to score, and Todd Blackledge just boom, 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 hitting guys all over the place. And then with like only a few seconds left, scored the go-ahead touchdown to win the game. And that was like in certain ways, kind of a turning point, or, you know, a jumping off point where they then parlayed that into going to the Sugar Bowl, beating Georgia and winning their first national championship. So he was, so, you know, that was like a neat story. So I wanted to share that on here because I was like, man, that's like such a cool thing, like filled with so many plot lines that you just would not know about, you know, if you were just a casual fan. So
for Penn State to get a favorable call, it needs to be questionable lighting conditions.
I mean, maybe
that's what you're saying.
Draw that correlation. Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, maybe that's a hypothesis that we have to test out, but, yeah, that's my story.
Yeah. That's a cool story. I love these, you know, Penn Staters to Penn Staters. It's fun. So much fun sharing all these stories. I definitely would love to have more guests on in the off season, especially in the summer here, to maybe share their best Penn State experience and what they see in the stands for a game. I think that would be awesome to share. And hey, if that's something you'd be interested in doing, make sure to send us an email at the Nittany Blues Podcast. We definitely would love to have more guests on so that way you guys can share your stories as well.
Agreed. Yeah. So what do you say we put a bow on this one?
Yeah. One last thing. Speaking of 83, last time NC State made the Final Four, so both their men's and women's team made it. That was back in like the Jimmy V run. So what were your thoughts on like DJ Burns and them just like making a rip at it?
I mean, holy crap. Just talk about like just bowling ball to brackets, like just taking, you know, all these blue bloods and all these supposed favorites and stuff like that, and just, you know, just basically noogieing all of them with just sheer will and size. Like I think it's awesome. I think it's exciting. I mean, for them especially, I mean, just that, like, you know, I mean Vince, how would you react if Penn State, like, men and women were both in the Final Four?
Like, I would be, I'd be on cloud nine. I would definitely be taking a lot of days off of work or time off work to catch these games, and
yeah,
I'd be having the time of my life, man. I'd be down at like Champs and Brothers and all these places to watch the game and just to, you know, be a part of that energetic environment. Just because, like, it's crazy. Like, look at this squad. They were like 17-14. Which is very close to what Penn State was this year. They lost 7 of 9 games heading into the conference tournament. So they had to play on a Tuesday. They're in the semifinals versus Virginia. They're in a very bad situation. Literally, they're down 3. They have to foul. And all the UVA guy has to do is sink a free throw, and it's game over. He misses the free throw with like 5 seconds left. Then you have Virginia or sorry, you have NC State making a like half court shot. If they don't make that shot, they don't even make the tournament. Like, that's insane. They go from not making the tournament to making a crazy half court shot to winning the ACC and then, you know, making this huge run to the Final Four. And it's they're going to be playing Purdue, which Purdue has been known to, you know, not be their best outside of this year when it comes to March Madness and, you know, something that Matt Painter has gone through. So it'll be a fun Final Four. Who do you got winning on both the men's and women's side? And after I get your winners, I want to have a share a funny tidbit. I don't know if you saw it or not. So who do you got winning?
I got Iowa on the women's side. I think they're a team of destiny. I think Caitlin Clark is just too good to stop at this point after she dropped 41, was it, on LSU. And then on the men's side, like I think I got to go with UConn again. I mean, they just look like the Monstars from Space Jam when they played against Illinois. I mean, I was watching that game as I was running, and I was just like transfixed because I'm like, Illinois doesn't know what to do. Like they were getting open looks at shots, and they were scared to take them.
It was a 30-0 run.
Yeah.
They were tied at 23-23 near halftime, which there's been a lot of low scoring games this year, like in the 20s at halftime.
Yeah. And so I was just like watching this game, and I'm like, I'm watching Illinois just struggle to put together any semblance of offense. And so then, you know, they take a tough shot with like just a few seconds remaining in the shot clock. And then it just, you know, with just all the efficiency of a well-oiled machine, UConn just, you know, perfect spacing, passing, like open guy layup points. Like it was just a different game. So I think if I had to pick like two to go to the finals, I'm probably taking UConn and Purdue. I think that game will just kind of come down to whichever team is better on that day, because I don't think there's like a huge difference between both of them. I just think that, you know, if UConn plays like they did against Illinois in what was that, that would have been the Elite Eight, like they're the team to beat, in my opinion.
Yeah, I do think the NC State run, I feel like it has to come to an end. Like typically when a team like that,
where it typically ends. Yeah.
Typically when a team like that makes, just like wins the ACC, typically you see those teams like bounced in the first game just because the emotional toll it takes to play that good for that long. Like it takes a lot out of you. And like just for them to even win a game in the NCAA tournament is amazing, based off of like the run they had to make in that tournament. So that's incredible. So if they make it to a national championship game, I think like the lowest seed to win has been like a seven or eight. So that would be, you know, something. I do think Purdue is going to, you know, get the win. And I do think UConn is just, you know, in a class of their own, just kind of like last year, they've won all their games by about 30. Or they've been up by 30 points for the past like 11 games at some point. So they're dominant. I think it would take a big effort to stop them. And then on the women's side, I think you'll see South Carolina beating NC State. And I like Iowa's chances to knock off UConn. And actually, interesting enough, Caitlin Clark was asked about UConn, and she said that, like most girls, she wanted to go there because 5 years ago, UConn was the powerhouse. Still at that point, they were the dynasty in college basketball. And she was like, yeah, I wanted to go there, but, you know, Gino never contacted my family, like didn't come to open gyms or anything to watch me. And so, you know, if you're Gino right now, how much does it eat at you to know you missed out on a Caitlin Clark who wanted to go there?
Yeah. I mean, you're not going to hit on all of them. He's sure. That's probably going to be one that, keeps him up at night for sure. But, you know, he's been in the game long enough that he just kind of knows that, you know, you're never going to be 100% right. And, you know, the fact of the matter is there's lots and lots of other teams that, you know, miss the mark when it comes to Caitlin Clark, because, you know, every team not named Iowa would love to have her on their team.
Yeah. And hey, they got a really good player too in Paige Buchners. So, you know, they're doing really well. So maybe Gino's going to have to pick up some of Dan Hurley's like weird superstition habits. Like he doesn't eat peanut M&Ms that are like the color of the team he's facing or something like that. So maybe if Gino just avoids those, you know, yellow and black M&Ms, so he'll be good. And maybe that's what they'll need to pull the upset over Iowa.
Amen to that. So what else you got?
So you had, if you had one job, this is also a thing that is not an April Fool's joke. Did you know that in one of the regions, the women's 3-point line, one was the correct distance and one was longer? Did you hear about that?
I did see that. Yeah. So that was, that was interesting, a little disappointing, but overall just not great for anybody involved.
Yeah. Like I can't believe that. Like people, that's their one. It's like you had one job to make sure the 3-point arc was the correct distance. So that could have been like a huge issue. And, you know, fortunately both teams agreed to play, and you know, you score on one side in one half and one side in the second half. So it does even out. So it's not like there's a huge competitive disadvantage, but if you're the team, I would rather have the short 3-point line in the second half where I need to know how many points I need. So I thought that was like a huge, like competitive disadvantage. And if like one of the teams did not agree to play, they would have probably had a need to find a new venue, because I don't think they had like a backup court that they could just put together. So yeah, that would have, the NCAA is extremely lucky that both programs agreed to play. I think it was Texas and NC State agreed to play. But yeah, so that was mind-boggling to me that at that level in Division I athletics, they messed something like that up. So yeah, hopefully that doesn't happen again in the future. But yeah, so that's a kind of a wacky thing that seems like an April Fool's joke, but was not. So
yeah, NCAA definitely has egg on their face, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, before we wrap things up here, speaking of eggs and roll over to Easter. So what's your best Easter side before we log off here?
Oh man, love me a good mac and cheese.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. Now as an Italian, I don't partake in too much mac and cheese. I prefer other pastas, but you know, when you have the ham and the mac and cheese, I think it's a nice combo. So that's definitely one of my favorite. Also had some pineapple stuffing, which was pretty good. So that went good on the ham, and yeah, had a good time in Easter. Also had some like cheesy potatoes that were good. So yeah, a lot of good food. So yeah, Easter, yeah, might not be to the level of the Thanksgiving or Christmas when it comes to, you know, food and things, but definitely got some good sides in there.
Got the job done.
And then of course you got some chocolate too. So if you're good or can find the chocolate.
If you're good.
Yeah, if you're good, yeah, you got to find the Easter eggs or you don't get the chocolate.
That's a good point.
Yeah, so I think this was a good pod, and I look forward to talking. Andrew, tell the fans how they can help us out here at the Nittany Blues podcast.
Yeah, so the number one way that you can help us out here is by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you are listening to this podcast from. I know that it seems like a small deal to you, but it actually helps us out a lot, helps the algorithm share our podcast to new listeners, helps us grow the fandom of the show, and also share our love of the Nittany Lions. So that's the number one way. Other great ways is by visiting our website, nittanyblues.com. You can listen to all of our previous episodes there. You can learn more about the show, about Vince and myself. You can also visit our merch store at shop.nittanyblues.com. We've got some cool new designs coming out here pretty soon in celebration of Blue and White Weekend. So be on the lookout for that. And on top of that, if you follow us on all forms of social media at Nittany Blues and Nittany Blues Podcast, we share updates about the show, new merch, exclusive updates that Vince alluded to earlier on in the episode. So be sure to follow us on there. But Vince, that's all I got. Take us home.
All right. As always, thank you guys for listening. It starts with I love you. It ends with I love you. And we want to remind you that we are
the Nittany Blues Podcast. We'll see you next time.